70% stocks and 30% bonds, or, you know, 80% stock and 20% bonds. And I'll be hovering right around, you know, that 8% threshold. I'll drop from 9%, right? 9% pure stocks down to 8% with the bonds. If I instead put 20% into real estate or other alternatives, I bring the risk down, but I don't go down from 9% to 8%. I'm going to go from 9% up to 10%. So I'm going to improve my returns and lower my risk. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance saving so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Everybody, come on in and take your seats. Class is back in session. If you recall, this is going to be the second episode that we have in a four-episode series that we're doing. We're just kind of interrupting the flow where, we started this Service and Wealth podcast with talking about budgeting basics. You know, pay yourself first, how much you need to plan to save, building that into your budget, and then allocating it out, splitting it up, diversifying in that sense. You know, between retirement and non-retirement accounts so that you can secure your retirement and you're also not all in. You know, anybody who's a TSP maxer or maxes out their IRAs and doesn't have any other savings, they're just going to be grinding for the next 40 to 45 years. And that sucks. Save a little bit more, split it up, and you can have the best of both worlds. You can have a multi-million dollar retirement account, TSP account, and have a super comfortable upper middle class, maybe even upper class retirement. And that's starting from working class, or assuming you're starting from nothing. Like your first paycheck in the military is the first money you ever had, and you're not going to get nothing from anybody else. And you can still achieve those heights. And then so long as you're investing outside of retirement, you're going to be able to, you know, afford other things. Now, if you're just investing for retirement, you just are in the military, some of the stuff we're going to talk about today, it is hopefully enough just to make it simple for you to like choose the C fund, right? And you know, there's so much bad gouge out there and misinformation about what you should be doing and where your money should be going, and the government doesn't even help you because they like by default are putting money in the G fund, which is the worst one. You know, the kind of the reason they do that is because they have better control over it. And did you know, right, that you actually get your G fund is still better than any other government bond fund out there? Because when for everybody who starts getting the matching under BRS or makes just their payroll deductions into the G fund and BRS, for those, you know, few thousand folks who wash out in the first few months or year or so, in the military or whatever, they have invested. They don't get to keep those matching contributions. You got to stick around for at least a couple of years. And so all of those matching contributions get taken back and they get sprinkled out amongst everybody who's still in, right? So you get extra. It's better. The G fund's better than government bond funds and other, you know, through other brokerages or other retirement, systems, employer-sponsored retirement systems. But it's still not good enough. And we'll talk about that today. Because today we're going to talk about introduction to portfolio theory and development. And it's a mouthful to say that. But what we're really going to talk about today is diversification and risk. And those are words you've definitely heard before. And they're things you need to start thinking about. And it's because your goal is to have money to do things that you want, like have cars, have houses, take trips, not have to go into debt, build wealth, get secondary forms of income from your investment portfolio, from real estate, you know, all those, like that's what you're trying to do so that by the time you're in your 40s and 50s, you're earning not just, you know, six figures from your military paycheck, you're earning another six figures from your investments. And then all that keeps rolling forward and rolling forward. And by the time you're in your 50s and 60s, you know, you're making $300,000-$500,000 a year. And that's everybody in uniform can achieve it. You just got to kind of know what you're doing. And it requires investing outside of the TSP. And so that means you're going to face a choice between doing it yourself or paying somebody else to do it. Between doing it yourself and being educated and intentional and doing it in a way that gets to your goals, or just randomly, you know, for lack of a better term, like just spazzing about and chasing shiny objects and committing and decommitting and going back and forth. And, you know, there's some really fascinating data out there that it's something that I personally love, is from 2001 through 2020. So this is with the sort of the, not quite the start of the recovery from the dot-com bubble or the 9/11 stock market crash. So there were losses at the front, and then there was a great recession in the middle. And it included the COVID crash, right? And so for that 20-year period, it was actually one of the less good 20-year periods for the U.S. stock market, and it only averaged 7.6% per year. It's since rebounded, right? It's getting back up close to the 9, 10% per year that it's always been doing, thanks to the last 4 years. But during that 20-year period, the market returned 7.6%. If you were diversified, meaning that you put bonds into your portfolio, in the case of like the TSP, that would be adding like the F fund to the C fund. So you're following this conventional wisdom, typical advice, like the BS kind of stuff you hear from around the water cooler from people who are doing it but don't know why they're doing it. That dropped you down to 6.4%. So you gave up 1.2% in your returns, which is quite a bit. That equates to about 4 or 5 extra years of work and investing on your life if you're going to lose that 1 to 1.2%. Well, the average DIYer investor over that 20-year period only got 2.9%, right? Like, they got crushed. And the reason why they got crushed, they got absolutely hammered, is because they didn't have the knowledge. They didn't have the understanding. And what happens when you don't have the knowledge or the understanding of what you're doing? Well, first of all, you spread yourself too thin. You chase shiny objects. You go after meme stocks. You go after crypto. You put some money over here. You're investing in bonds. Like, it's all over the place. And it doesn't make sense. And then the other thing you do is you get scared because you don't have the knowledge of the big picture and the long run and remember what you're doing. And so the market goes down and you sell. And the market comes back up and you start to buy again. And you end up, you know, like they joke about it, right? But you end up like buying high and selling low. And that's why you lose money. So the purpose of this 4-part series is to provide that education, provide the knowledge, provide the understanding and the perspective so that you can build yourself a strategy and then you can stick to it. Now, once again, this episode is going to be packed with information, just like the first one, you know, 101, we came at you with the fire hose. Well, you know, we brought up another tanker truck and we just switched the hose over and there's another fire hose that is about to get unleashed today. So grab a notebook and a pen and be ready to write. You know, and again, also this kind of knowledge and this kind of content, we're going to push a bunch of it in our mini course that you can sign up now on our website, www.militarywealthcoach.com. You can go just sign up and then you'll be added to the list to be notified once it's published, you know, when that course drops. And also by opting in and getting our weekly newsletter, you'll get little tidbits of this. You know, for a lot of you, that might be how you're even listening to the podcast, is you got the newsletter, you saw the link, you said, oh man, cool. Like, this week's podcast is Investing 101. I always want to know about what to do with investing. And you clicked on it and you've been listening, you know, or in this case, this week, Investing 201, right? So we get the info out there, but it's a lot. And so probably the best option is to read, listen, take course, like, is, you know, many different ways that you can to just kind of like digest it all. And then, you know, before we launch into this discussion today, on diversification and risk, let's just remind ourselves of the analogy that we're using, which is a box. It's PCS time. You've either from underneath your rack, or you know, maybe you drove over to Home Depot and just got a grip of flattened, you know, moving boxes and a bunch of rolls of tape, and you're just building boxes so you can pack up your stuff and get ready to move. And the reason why you have that box is it keeps all your stuff together. You get to concentrate like your stuff and then take it with you, and you're in control of it. You know what's in there. It's safe and it's doing what you want it to do. And that's the same way to treat your investments and be a do-it-yourself or a DIY investor. And so in 101, we said, okay, there's a couple things. Like one of the reasons why everybody's got to care about investing and everybody's got to invest in some way is because inflation is chugging along. The actual data is 3.1%. It's not 2%. It's not 1.7%. It's averaged 3.1% for 109 years, like starting in 1914 through today. So it's not going anywhere. It's probably only going to get worse. But that's got to be the bottom of your box. That's the safety. No single dollar that you ever put in that box should be earning less than 3.1%. You know, and then you also have to go with then we've got our four walls of the box that keeps everything together. And the one is that when you put money in this box, you're committing for the long run. This is not money that you're going to take back out next week, next month, maybe next year, depending on what happens and what it's for, but generally for the long run. And if you have a 10-year mindset, right? So that's really like this first vertical wall of the box is like that 10-year mindset. Like we're putting money in there, we're investing, we're after big goals, and that's going to take time. And then the second wall in our box is you've got to build a budget that you can save the same amount of money every month, and you can increase that amount over time in order to keep you on track. Because you got to start as soon as you can, and you got to stay consistent. You can't take months or years off of your saving and investing, because everything that you needed to save and invest that year is just going to get rolled forward to the next year, and it's going to become more and more expensive to reach the same goal. So consistency is key. Now we've got two more walls on this box. And once we have all four walls built, it's going to allow us to concentrate, to put our money in there with like a single focus strategy, chasing a goal, maybe a couple goals. And, you know, when you concentrate your money, it's also concentrating your time and your brain power. If you're trying to learn how to do, you know, swing trading with stocks, you're trying to teach yourself how to use AI bots to do day trading, you're trying to write your own covered calls in order to get into the options game because you heard like that's a way that you can make some money, you know, consistent cash flow without market risk. You want to become a real estate investor, and you also are doing crypto trading, and you're doing spot and margin. You know, if you're in all of it, you're just like an inch deep, you know? You know just enough of how to do it, but you don't really know enough to do it really well. And let me tell you, my eyes were open, just forced open, you know, back when I was, how old was I? 23, 24? Something like that. Like my second month on the job working in banking in New York on Wall Street, and I was a strategy guy. So my boss was like, hey, look, I've got, you know, in this one particular case, he's like, here's $60 million. We've got $900 million more coming. Here's $60 million. I want you to build a strategy and then work with the trading desk to figure out if the strategy works so we can park that, you know, basically $1 billion in here. I was like, all right, that's a lot of money, but let's do it. And so I had to go down, and this is my first time onto a trading desk at a big five bank. And I walk in, not knowing what to expect. But what I find is there's like four or five rooms just adjacent to each other. Each room, there's like 10 or 12 people. And each of these people has like eight computer screens. And each one of these guys, each one of these traders is responsible for between one and eight or 10 companies, right? So if you're trying to be out there and be a stock trader and thinking like you're going to do better than the market, that means you're saying to yourself, like, I can look, you know, if we just look at the S&P 500 with 500 companies, that you are going to have the time and the brain power and the technology and the Bloomberg terminal, you know, which costs like $30,000 a year to license. Probably that's old data, probably, but And you're going to be better than that, you know, like that room of like 16 to 20 to 30 traders who do it full time, like 80 hours a week. You're just going to, you're going to get distracted. You're going to get burned out and you're going to miss things and you're going to make mistakes. So instead you just concentrate, come up with a strategy you can manage, put it in this box using these general fundamentals, like marksmanship fundamentals, you know, and then you just consistently squeeze the trigger and just put the rounds into the black, you know, and that's all it is. That's for you and I who are just, you know, we're all self-made at some point in our life. We will be self-made if we're not already. It's just a slow, steady rate of fire. Just continue to hit the target every time and not trying to get too sexy or crazy. All right. So before I go on, it's the disclaimer time, right? All investment has risk. And this episode, like this whole series, is educational. It's about tips, strategy, and helping you build your own investment plan. And so, you know, since all investment has risk, make sure you do your own research, make your own decisions. And if you have doubts or questions, you know, reach out, find a professional and get professional advice. So today we're going to tape up those other two sides of the box. We're going to talk about diversification and risk. Okay. And I guarantee you've heard these terms before. Everybody talks about them in some way. And they're kind of like opposing forces. And so that's why they're two walls. Like, because all investment have risk, we need risk as part of our box. To have zero risk means no box, right? That means just like 1.2% returns. That is like the risk-free rate. Sometimes the risk-free rate is closer to zero. And that's why your checking and savings accounts don't pay you any money, right? If you take the risk out, there's no return. So you got to have risk on one side. And then pushing back against that side of the box is the diversification side. Because what diversification does is it finds ways to reduce the risk while keeping your returns or your profits, all right? And, you know, there's a whole lot that goes into it, but we're not here to be academics. We're not here trying to, like, you know, pass AP economics or, you know, pass a Series 7 licensing exam or anything like that, right? We're not going to be bankers or traders. So, you know, first is we're just here to understand it so that we can use these tools and use this knowledge to build a good box, build a good strategy, and go out there and invest confidently and successfully. And then the second thing is if you don't understand this stuff, they can sound really scary, right? And the sales and marketing teams at the big banks and the financial advisory services industry, all those firms, you know, like the Schwab, Fidelities, that you see the commercials and they're like, get the peace of mind with a Fidelity advisor who will help you achieve your dreams. They don't do anything special for you. They do nothing you can't do for yourself. They just do it more expensively, right? But the reason why they make so much money and they have so many clients is that there's lots of people who, you know, they're feeling like insecure, they're feeling scared, and they're seeing the top of the mountain way off in the distance, and they're like, that's my financial freedom. The only way I can get there is if I pay this advisor to, like, take me to the top. But you can do it yourself. You can get to the top of that mountain. It just takes some knowledge. And that's what we're here to, you know, we're down in the valley right now, but we're getting the knowledge so you can climb that mountain and achieve it, and you're going to achieve it faster, and you're going to have more money if you do it yourself. The data doesn't lie on that. You know, maybe we'll do a podcast in a couple months where, you know, it's like my favorite thing to do is just shoot at that target of financial advisors and like the witchcraft and the BS that comes from them. But we'll try to stay on topic today, right? It's easy. I like to pull out all the data and the, you know, that shows how not good they are. And I can get distracted, but let's try to keep on. Come on, Ted, let's do it. So anyway, if you don't have the knowledge, you know, you can be scared by risk, by how to invest, and you just hand over your money, right? And they charge you, I'll say this one thing, okay? They're going to charge you on average like 1 to 1.3%. Some of the fees are coming down, but in general, like the industry standard is about 1% on top of the expense ratios of your investments. So if they put you into mutual funds that cost 0.2%, your total expense ratio is going to be 1.2% because they're still going to take their 1% commission. Well, losing 1% each year off the top in fees, you know, that 1% comes out of your profits, out of your returns. Not like 1% of the profits, but if you had 8% returns, now you only have 7 because you had to pay 1% of the total portfolio in a fee. It's going to take you 4 or 5 years at a minimum of more working and investing just to make up for that over the course of your, you know, the next 3 or 4 decades. So what sounds more scary? Like learning about risk and diversification and putting in, you know, 50 to 100 hours, maybe more, teaching yourself how to manage your own portfolio, or giving up 4 to 5 years of freedom of a potential early retirement to keep working because you were too scared or too lazy to do the work yourself and you paid somebody else, right? I don't think that's worth 4 years of my life. In fact, that's it's definitely not, right? And that's why I don't do it. And that's why I created this entire brand and company and all of our content is to help you avoid being in that situation. So we've got to have a goal, right? We've got to have a system. We've got to have a goal. We're trying to get to this mountaintop, and this mountaintop is a certain amount of money. Grant Cardone says 5 million. Susie Orman says like 18 million. I think 2.5 million is like probably the bare minimum. Just, you know, I've run the numbers like 50 times. And I think with inflation and life expectancy and everything else, I think you need 2.5 million before you can consider yourself ready to retire, to be financially free and stop working, right? So we've got that target. And then we've got, as we talked about last week, we've got this amazing amount of billions and billions of pieces of data on stock returns. And we know what the stock market can get us. And we end up using a reasonable and like proven and also like relatively conservative 8% annual return. Now, there's one rule that we didn't talk about last week. You know, we talked about the rule of 72 as a way to like project how long it takes our money to grow and account balances to double. But there's also this thing, the 4% rule, or the safe withdrawal rate. And the 4% rule says that, you know, once you stop working and you start living off your investments, whether that's your TSP, your IRA, or a non-retirement account, you can withdraw 4% per year. And, you know, you're going to at least have as much, you know, like you have like a 0% chance of running out of money in 40 years. And you have only like a 2% chance of having to like reduce your income. So, and that's based on this 8% real return. Now, so obviously if you're paying an advisor and they're taking 1%, now you're only getting 7%. And now the 4% rule is a little bit too risky. Right? You're going to have to live on less. You have to go down to like 3 or 3.3%. You know, that can be a difference between, you know, $100,000 a year and $65,000 a year. Like that can be quite a big difference. So that's another reason why you should try to do this yourself and not have to pay an advisor, is so you can make sure you get 8%. But 8% is also, like that's, and that's how we make our projections to double up. Right, to get to like 2.5 million by age 60, where do I need to be at what point based on 8% and the rule of 72, right, to get there? And that's like if you have 500,000 by the time you're 43, you're going to make it. You'll make it by 65, right? So we have that on the front end to plan how much to save, how long to invest for, and then we have it on the back end to let us know how much we can withdraw and live on in the future. Well, you know, 8% is good for planning, but it's not like the rule. And the fact of the matter is that when we look back at these stock returns, we said last week that the stock market itself averages 10.8 per year when you look at it like a 30-year investment period, and 10.2% when you look at like a 10-year investment horizon. And what that translates to is not 8%, but that translates to about 8.5 to 9%, right? So, because we have to, you know, we have to back out inflation, we have to back out some fees and whatnot. So even though the thing's chugging along, giving you 10%, like it ends up in your pocket not quite being worth that much. But you know, if you can be all in on the stock market and get 9% instead of 8%, that means you can go faster. But that does come at a risk, at a trade-off, and that's these big scary crashes, right? Like you think if you're at least, you know, in your 30s, you should remember the dot-com bubble that came right around, like, you know, the turn of the millennium. And you may not remember it, but you lived through the Great Recession, and everybody should remember the COVID crash. Even if you weren't invested, you definitely saw the, you know, the memes and the headlines and the news tickers. And maybe that scares you, right? So like maybe for you, you're like, okay, I could go full gas and like get 9% and then reach my, you know, have my first million by like age 42 instead of age 44. Just spitballing. I don't know if that's exactly right. But I really don't want to deal with the stress and the heartburn that comes with, you know, watching a stock market crash. So I want to get that risk out. And so I want to diversify. Remember, we said risk and diversification are like, they're opposite sides on our box, opposite walls. They push against each other, but they also support each other. And so you're like, I need to diversify to get rid of this risk. And so you just turn to the internet, you turn to ChatGPT, say, what is the most efficient risk-adjusted portfolio? And you find out that it's 75% bonds and 25% stocks. This is in a risk adjusted, this is the best you can do, right? Between stocks and bonds. The combination, 75% bonds, 25% stocks, best you can do. If you have more bonds than that, you're going to do worse because your returns go down. The risk stays the same, but the returns go down, which means it's less efficient. And then for a while, if you add more stocks, the returns go up, but the risk goes up faster, right? And so you might think, I'll just do that. But here's the problem with that. And again, you're just following the herd, right? Like everybody says, oh, diversify, add bonds, this is safe. You're going to be below 8% with that allocation. It's going to be 7.6%. But then when we factor in inflation and other things, it actually drops to 6.4%. So you are like 20% below what you need in order to reach your goals. You need a minimum 8% on these investment dollars, and you're only getting 6.4. And so that means that not only is it going to take you an extra 5+ years to get enough money to retire, so now instead of retiring at 65, you're retiring at 70, or if, you know, instead of 60, it's 65, or maybe this defeats every hope you ever had of early retirement in your 50s. You also are not getting enough returns to live on the 4% rule. So you can't just get to 2.5 million and live off 100,000 a year. You're only going to be able to live off 65,000 a year. So now you actually, you know, either back yourself into this corner of like, oh, I was so risk averse and I diversified in the wrong way that I have to, you know, dial back my retirement lifestyle by 1/3, which is a lot. Or I've got to increase my target from 2.5 million to 4 million, which means I got to work an extra 5 years, right? And so you really can't do it. You still have to, when you're talking about your risk and risk-adjusted returns, you can't get rid of so much risk that you drop below this 8% total real return, okay? Now, just to, so we don't get confused, right? Like in this box is all of our money for all of our financial goals. And so like those things that are like, you know, a year away, like our emergency savings fund, 3 or 4 years away, like a new car, 5 to 8 years away, like buying our first house, like we're not investing that stuff in the stock market because we can't afford to save up, you know, $50,000 for a house and then lose 20% of it. So we're putting it in high yield savings accounts. And that money is still, it's still following our, you know, our first rule, the bottom of our box of at least 3.1% to protect it from inflation by putting in a high yield savings account. So this 8% number, this is for stuff that we're doing longer term wealth building, longer term goals, you know, dream home, college savings, early retirement, actual retirement, all that stuff, 8% target, right? Real quick little, you know, explanation. Again, we're talking about having to back out inflation. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm throwing these numbers at you and you don't have to understand all of the mechanics, right? But I'm telling you, like, okay, stock market returns 10.8% per year, but we're only planning on 8%. And you might be thinking, like, this guy's stupid. Does he not know math? Obviously, he doesn't. He's a Marine. Like, he just eats crayons and, you know, throws rocks, right? Guilty as charged. But, and this is, you might see, like, influencers online saying, like, look at what you can do when you get 10% return. Show me where, right? Because, again, I've done the math. I'm looking at it. You know, that 10.8% has to be adjusted for dividends, which dividends are like, you know, when you own Apple, like they share some of their profits at the end of the year and they pay a dividend. So you get, maybe Apple went up 10% last year. And so, but they also pay a 1% dividend. So you actually get 11%, if that makes sense. So you got dividends that adds to your return. You have fees, it's, you know, either transaction fees, broker fees, expense ratios on your mutual funds, those come out. And inflation comes out. And so you take 10.8%, you add in the average dividend yield of 1.45%, you subtract the 0.05% average expense ratio on index funds, and then you subtract 3.1% for inflation, and you get 9.1%. And that's on a 100% stock portfolio. Well, if you do a 70% stock portfolio with 30% bonds, which a lot of people do, that's like sort of that, or like a 60-40, 60-40, 70-30, that's like kind of the standard cliched diversified investment portfolio, which, you know, it's not much, right? It doesn't do you much, but it's still something. You know, that comes out at like 9.2 instead of 10.8%. And when you adjust it for inflation, it becomes 8%, right? 8% real return, which means not just is it growing, but your buying power is growing with it. So that's why we say 8% based on that blended portfolio. And so just remember that as we go forward, we're going to start talking a little bit more about real estate. We'll talk a lot about real estate in future episodes, but you can't just say, like, you know, if, let's say you're looking at your first rental property and you're analyzing it and you work out the numbers and you're like, whoa, cool, I get like an 8% rate of return on my money here. Like, that's pretty good. Did you factor in inflation? If you did not, you got to subtract 3.1%. And you're down, you know, now you're down around 5%. You're down in the kind of the danger zone where, can you make that deal work? Yeah, you can. But is that deal getting you an 8% real risk adjusted return? And that's like the point of these diversification and risk sides of our box, is to make sure that whatever we do to balance those two out, we're still going to get 8% inflation adjusted or real returns. So that we can still, A, hit our target, like reach our wealth goal as we planned it. And then B, once we hit that wealth goal and we could stop working at whatever age, 50, 55, 65, 70, we can withdraw our salary from our new, you know, retirement salary from our investments at the rate we planned. Right. If we're below 8%, if that money's not growing 8%, if it's growing 5, 6, 7%, we can't withdraw the 4% anymore. We got to withdraw less, or else we're going to deplete our savings before we die. Oh, you know, hopefully not, but like that becomes a risk. You know, so anyway, this is sort of like the big problem that we run into. And if you don't have the knowledge, not only are you going to get burned with the fees that you end up paying to an advisor, but they're going to burn you because they're going to say, I'm going to protect you from risk. I'm going to diversify your portfolio. Look at this. Every year, we're going to rebalance it. We're going to move you. You have too much stocks. We're going to add some bonds. We're going to sprinkle in some, you know, commodities or whatever. And they're eventually going, they're going to put you on this glide path, right? And I say glide path because it's kind of like a little better than free fall, but it's like gradually declining. It's constantly declining. You're no longer powered flight. You're no longer at the controls, flying your own plane, maintaining altitude, or going higher towards the peak of the mountain. You're gliding and you're losing altitude because they're putting you on this path towards that 75, 80% bond, maybe even 100% bonds portfolio by the time you're in your late 40s, 50s, and 60s. And they're killing your returns. And it's all because they're too afraid of risk. You're too afraid of risk because you don't understand it. And they don't understand like how diversification ruins wealth creation and retirement planning. You know, and in fact, I don't know if I should do a whole episode on this, but like the life cycle funds offered by the Thrift Savings Plan, if you have any of those, as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, please sell every single one of them. Just go in there and click sell 100% and get every penny you have out of the life cycle funds, because that is what they do. All right. They just every 3 to 5 years, they're going to leverage you down into more and more bonds. And I took their whole portfolio of life cycle funds and I took their average annual returns and I did a simulation for a 22-year-old who just starts investing in their TSP. 22-year-old joins the military. I did it for an enlisted, right? So, you know, maybe this is a kid who you took a gap year or started college, changed mind, got inspired, got patriotic, whatever. I don't know. But started at 22, started saving. And they chose the life cycle fund in the TSP. Why? Because if you read like the military money manual, like that book tells you to do this, which is a disservice and a crying shame. And there are other military, you know, money influencers out there. There are people in your command. There are people at command financial specialists. There are people at the community services branches on every base who give free, quote unquote, free financial counseling who will tell you to invest in the life cycle funds. But because they fail to maintain that 8% total return or better, listen to what happens. Now, this is just assuming you follow our ultimate retirement plan guidance. You're enlisted. You put $550 a month into your TSP, and you have two options. You can put 70% into the C fund and 30% into the F fund. And at age 70, you will have $4.2 million. You serve for 20 years, you get out, and then you just keep saving the same amount, you know, into your IRA or whatever. So you keep chugging along. It's the same annual amount where you're saving like about $9,000 all told when you include the BRs matching. You're going to end up with $4.2 million at age 70. If you were in the life cycle fund doing the same dollars saved and contributed, but only in life cycle funds, at age 70, you're going to have $1.6 million. You're going to have like 40% of what you could have. And it's all because those things, the life cycle funds, just like what most of the strategies are that are sold by professional, you know, financial advisors and wealth managers, they kowtow to this idea of like risk and fear, and they just move you into bonds, right? And that's disaster. So you can't do it. You've got to have a minimum threshold, and you have to always be looking to make sure you have 8% total real return. And the lowest you can ever go, if you're only doing stocks and bonds, the lowest you can ever go is 70% stocks, right? And because we said that's 9.2% unadjusted. And after we adjust for inflation and everything else, that's going to get you 8%. So like 70% stocks, 30% bonds is like, if that's your diversification plan and your plan to like get risk out of there, that's the lowest you can ever go. The big thing though is that diversification is not just about spreading around, you know, your money in stocks or stocks and bonds. And, you know, one of the things that I did is, you know, in the year before I started putting content down and started building this brand and this company, I set up meetings, free consultations with financial advisors. You know, in every single one of them, they're like, I've looked at your portfolio and you're not quite diversified enough. We would like you to, you know, you have 27% in S&P 500 technology and you should be at 24%. So we think you should sell, you know, 500 shares of this and buy. It's just trading stocks for stocks, right? Or even stocks for bonds, which is not real diversification because you're either just going stocks for stocks in the same stock market or bonds, that might be in those same companies, or at the very least are like government bonds. And everybody in America is still tied together by, you know, our federal funds rate and J-PAL and, you know, the Federal Reserve and all that stuff. And so bonds and stocks tend to they're more correlated than other things, right? And correlation just means like connectedness. So like Apple and Facebook stocks are super closely connected. They're highly correlated. And like if Facebook's going down, Apple's probably going down. But maybe like, you know, a treasury bond and Apple are not so closely connected, not so correlated. So maybe Apple goes down, but the treasury doesn't. Maybe the treasury goes up, right? So like that's why people do stocks and bonds. They start to move differently. But there are other things, right? And if we're talking about true diversification, it's not like, should I buy more technology ETFs or should I sell some of my oil and gas stocks in order to buy AI stocks? Like that's not diversification. And again, bonds are like, they're the go-to, they're the easy one. And especially when it comes to your retirement accounts, right? Because in TSP, you can't really choose anything other than stocks or bonds. But if for all the, you know, all the hype that bonds get for protecting you from risk and adding diversification, they can go down too. And in 2022, the bond market lost 17.8%. Like it was a total disaster. And yet they only average 5.3% returns. Like I get 5.25% on my high yield savings account, and that thing is insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, right? Which means not only can it not go down, but if like that bank goes out of business, the government's going to give me my money, right? And it's the same return as bonds. So when we're talking about diversification, I want you to consider thinking about your high yield savings account as your bond diversification. And if your emergency savings fund is sitting in there, if your new car fund is sitting in there, and if your future house fund is sitting in there, and you've got $50,000 in a high-yield savings account, you're already more than diversified, right? You can have $150,000 in your TSP, which for the average service member is like, that's about what they have after 20 years. It's not enough after 20 years. You got to do better than that. But like, you could be, you know, just stay 100% in the C fund in your TSP your whole life. Cranking out those 10.8% pure stock returns. And then you've got your high yield savings account protecting your cash. And the whole thing taken together, all of this money in the box, the stocks and the high yield savings accounts all together, you're still, the whole portfolio is still doing 8% real return, right? Like your strategy is starting to come together. And so, you know, this is, again, this is just a way to think about it. Like full disclosure, I don't own any bonds. Because of that, right? They're still fairly correlated to stocks. The returns kind of stink and they can have bad years. So high yield savings account, that gives me similar returns to bonds, no downside risk. And then what do? Well, we invest in other alternatives in order to get that diversification. And the great thing about alternatives is they're super accessible to you because real estate, like that is one of the best options out there. If you don't want to buy houses, you can, you know, there's companies like Fundrise, which have, they're like mutual funds, but they invest specifically in real estate. Real estate is very, very far away from stock market. And so you get better diversification and risk protection by investing in real estate than you do in bonds. You know, some other options are like private equity, but you've got to be an accredited investor with a net worth of like over $1 million, and that can't include the value of your primary home to be accredited. Or you got to make $200,000 a year as a single person. So like, I guess general officers, flag officers are probably accredited. But if we ignore that sort of like that super high net worth or like private equity side and just think about real estate, right, as our way to diversify, well, now we have another option, right? And it's a better option than bonds because it's farther away than stocks, from stocks and bonds are. You know, stocks can go down, bonds will go down, but real estate can keep chugging along. And real estate's less volatile. Like there was a housing crisis and a housing bubble that happened, but that was you know, that was protected by multiple laws that were passed since then to make sure that we don't find ourselves in the same situation. So I think even if the housing market can go down, the controls and the laws are, they provide a very strong foundation compared to the stock market. Like, there's nothing stopping the stock market from, you know, another Black Monday, Black Tuesday, you know, 1929 through 1933, it lost 89% of its value. That could happen again, right? But the housing market is shored up. So it's a bit safer. It's more diverse. And Morningstar, if you've never heard of them, Morningstar is a major Wall Street firm that does research and ratings. And then they sell their information and they sell reports. And they did a report where they said, what is the value of diversifying with alternatives? So instead of doing stocks and bonds, what if you use alternatives like real estate? And what they found is it didn't matter if you were 100% bonds, 70% bonds, 70% stocks, or 100% stocks. If you put 20% of your portfolio into an alternative, right? So if I have $100,000, I put $20,000 into like real estate, my risk is going to go down because I'm diversifying, but the value of that alternative will actually boost my net return by 1 to 1.5% per year. So what that means is that, well, I know very, very clearly that like I can add bonds and go down to 70% stocks and 30% bonds, or, you know, 80% stock and 20% bonds. And I'll be hovering right around, you know, that 8% threshold. I'll drop from 9%, right? 9% pure stocks down to 8% with the bonds. If I instead put 20% into real estate or other alternatives, I bring the risk down, but I don't go down from 9% to 8%. I'm going to go from 9% up to 10%. So I'm going to improve my returns and lower my risk. What would that look like? So, you know, if I've been, let's just say I could be an E6, right, in my 9th or 10th year, or maybe I'm in 03, looking forward to getting pinned on 04. So I'm like 9 years into my military career. And I've been following the ultimate retirement plan that we developed here at the Military Wealth Coach, and that you can read all about in our upcoming book by the same name, The Ultimate Military Retirement Plan. And you've been saving $575 a month to your TSP every month, which combined with the, you know, your BRS matching has you saving about $10,000 for retirement per year, and you're 100% invested in the C fund. Right around your 9th year, you're going to have 100 to 120K in your TSP, which means you've already reached the threshold of what most people have in their TSP when they retire after 20, and you're there halfway there, right? Like, you are on the right flight path, the right trajectory to retire from the military with like $400,000 to $500,000 in there. You're doing awesome. But right now you've got 100 to 120K in there, and it's all in stocks, all in the C fund. Well, to get the 20% exposure diversification to alternatives, you need about $25,000 and go buy a rental property, right? Now, you can use a 0% down loan and you can buy just a standard $400,000 house with the, you know, in Virginia or Florida or wherever, Texas, with a VA loan. And you've got $25,000 of your money in this alternative asset, and that's great. Or, you know, you can use a conventional loan. You can save your VA loan for later, for buying your dream house, you know, or whatever. Buying the house that you're going to live in right now, well, you have to legally. Again, we'll cover that some other time. But you can use a conventional loan. You can take that $25K and you can go buy a cash flowing rental in the Midwest. Indiana, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Ohio, $25,000. Will get you a cash flowing rental and will get you that diversification, right? And those houses aren't going to be worth $1 million ever, but you are now diversified, protected, you have a cash flowing asset. And then, you know, eventually you get to the point where the returns in your TSP or your brokerage are making so much, you know, $50,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year just in returns and profit on average, that you don't even need to save to those anymore. You know, if you save the right amount, you can retire from the military after 20 years and stop saving for retirement and just put all your money in towards, you know, cash purchases and investing in real estate to keep that diversification going. Right. So that sort of wraps us up, right, for today. Another big talky episode, but the important take homes to learn as we've now taped up these last two sides of our box is that when it comes to risk, you can't run away from it. You can't have zero risk. You have to have some of it, and you have to take enough risk that you can still get that 8% real return, which means if you just in a pure stock and bond strategy, you can not go below 70% stocks. Like in your TSP, get out of the life cycle funds. You should stay in the 100% in the C fund, but if you have to have bonds to make yourself feel better about the risk, no more than 30% bonds, 70% stocks. So 30% F fund, 70% C fund. And if you're doing this in a brokerage portfolio, you're in the same allocations, right? It's just not going to be the same name funds. But when it comes to diversification, that other side of the box, what we can see is that, in fact, the net benefit of diversifying with bonds is not that great, because you can get the same rate of return by putting your cash into a high yield savings account. And that is not a market instrument. That's not an investment. That's a savings account, which means there's no downside risk and it's insured against loss. So it's a perfect diversification for that. And it can keep your total portfolio returns higher. And in fact, you need to have some alternatives, and that the best and most accessible alternative to someone in uniform is real estate. Within the first 5 years of your time in service, you should easily have purchased your first home with a VA loan or just finding a low cost market and using a conventional loan. We'll get into real estate more, but that's going to come after we finish up this series on just investing and get back to doing some of our regular content. And then we'll come back and we'll do, sort of like maybe a month long, real estate bootcamp. I know that's cliche and people have used it before, but that's just the first thing that came to mind. So this is going to wrap up today's lecture, and that's kind of what it felt like. But now we have a fully assembled and taped up box. And so we're going to be ready to come back for investing 301 next week, which I think it's August 4th, Sunday, August 4th. I think that's the next one that we'll drop the next one here. But we're going to have this fully assembled box where the bottom says, like, no dollar you have or hold should ever be below 3.1%. You've got to pick make a budget that allows you enough money in there to save to reach your goals. You've got to back off, diversify. You've got to have these risk-adjusted returns and inflation-adjusted returns that are getting you at least 8% in order to reach your goals and in order to be able to pull enough out of your investments when you do stop working to live at the level you want. You've got to treat this money as, once you put it in the investment box, that it's in there and you're given at least 5, 10 years, even longer, to work. And then you've got to diversify, and bonds are not an optimal diversification strategy, and you'd be much better off by having your bond-like instrument being your high-yield savings account, all the cash in there, and then adding in alternatives and real estate. And so, again, full disclosure, that's the strategy that we built, and we have a majority of wealth is in real estate, right? But if you look at the actual breakdown of the cash that's been saved and invested over the years, it's somewhere along the lines of about 20 to 30% of the total cash saved and invested is into real estate, and the rest has gone into, stocks and cash, and it works, right? So let's wrap things up. That's a lot of information, fire hose. Please consider, listen in again. Make sure you catch it all, because once you do, you're going to have everything you need, almost the keys of the castle, but everything you need to then next week when we start talking about like stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, some of the derivatives, and just like sort of how to analyze those and understand those, so that, you know, in the TSP, you don't have choices. It's just a C fund. Like, that's how you buy stocks, C fund. But when you go out into the bigger world and you have your brokerage account with Robinhood or E-Trade or Vanguard or Schwab, you know, you've got to compare. You've got thousands of options. You got to compare. And so, like, that's really what we're going to, you know, talk about next week, is like, now that you're ready to start investing your cash outside of retirement and you want to buy mutual funds or other things, how do you compare? What are some basic things you can do to see if it's a good investment without having to research the whole company, you know, read all their financial reports, look at their balance sheet, just looking at, you know, the stock and its historical performance, how to zero in on the things that can help you pick something that's better than something that looks almost exactly the same, right? Okay, I'm going to go get some water. That might be the longest episode ever. But I ask you to please, you know, subscribe to the podcast, Spotify or Apple if you haven't. If you're listening through our website, then, you know, go back to the homepage and opt in to our weekly newsletter so you can be the first to be notified of new content coming out. You know, every Wednesday we've got our blog published, and every Sunday podcast coming out. And that website again is www.militarywealthcoach.com. And, you know, above the fold is where you can opt in the newsletter. You can also opt in to be notified when our mini course drops in the next couple weeks here. So you can get that. It'll be self-paced. And if you sign up now, it's going to be free for you and come with some free downloads. And then also you can find links to all our socials. So Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're kind of readjusting our strategy to get away from TikTok, because that's not quite the right place for us, and do more Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube content. So, you know, we've even got this podcast is now part of our RSS feed on YouTube. So you can just go for Military Wealth Coach on YouTube, Military Wealth Coach on Facebook, and then on the other socials, we're MWC112358. It really helps us if you follow, like, and share. And then if you have, you know, if you've been on Amazon and you downloaded our book, whether you got it for free as an ebook or if you purchased the paperback and you haven't given us a 5-star review, next time you're on Amazon, please log in. We'd love to have that review help us boost us up in the search results and get to the top of the page so we can overcome some of those, you know, pretty much every other book and resource out there that you can get on military finance is like pre-BRS, or it's written by guys who, you know, retired, never were part of BRS. And, you know, I retired under BRS. I opted in. I taught myself about it, took advantage of it. And, you know, so I think right now I'm not aware of anybody else out in this space of military money educators or influencers who's like a retired BRS guy who can speak about it. Really appreciate you tuning in today. Hopefully you got a lot out of it, and, you know, sketch out your box, put your numbers on each side. And then next week we'll start putting stuff in the box. So until then, whether you're out there in uniform, military first responder, you're part of our veteran community, thanks for listening. Stay financially fit and mission ready.